Hiya, guten Tag. Nice. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and in the following dollop of time, we'll be rocking the Debels with Jazz Fuse Londoner Speech Debel. We'll be looking back at Tim Hardin on the feature with no name. We'll review new music from Eminem, Dead Prez, and Apes and Androids. We'll gorge our tiny little stomachs on your face back. But first, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. You're a zero. What's your name? No one's gonna ask. You better find out where they want you to go. Try and hit the spot. Get to know in the dark. Get to know where you're crying, crying, crying. Oh. Can you climb? That was New York's finest, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, now back with a new album, It's Blitz. Their third LP, there's been a change of musical direction from Karen O, Nick Zimmer and Brian Chase. Out go the garage punk numbers, in comes the tide of synths. When we played Heads Will Roll on Singles Club a few weeks back, opinion was divided. The only man in ardent favour was none other than Man About Town Tim Jones, who begins the following interview by addressing this thorny dance music issue.
You know, we've always wanted to have like a Yeah Yeahs dance song. Never really felt like that we did before. You know, now we have a few.
Do you have any favourite records that inspired the album? A lot of people on the blogs mentioned the Hacienda and kind of the Manchester scene. Was that something you looked at, or were there other records?
None of that, really. We weren't really listening to or referencing anything when we were making the record. It's like our own twisted versions of what we think a dance song should be, like for those tracks, I guess.
There's a lot of talk about it being a dance record. There's also a lot of ballads on the record and really beautiful, softer songs. I mean, I suppose it seems quite fragile, and there seems a lot of talk about relationships, but do you think a lot of it was based on the band and the kind of the tensions that were in the band before? Do you think that's where those ballads came from?
No, I would say the ballads, sort of a couple of them, like Skeletons and Little Shadow, were both kind of conceived in like a really particular atmosphere. The Alien one, you know, to one that we usually, almost like a storybook atmosphere, you know, where like we're in a barn in the winter with like snow falling outside and a fire stove like heating this barn and just having a sip of whiskey and like, you know, making music with synths and stuff. I mean, like, I think it was just more about just less tension, you know, and more macho love, I guess, because I'd say macho because, you know, it's two guys and a girl. It was like infused more with, I'd say, with love and that sort of thing, you know, than like struggle or anything like that. So no longer, no longer what you ask. Heels turn black. The cinders, they light the path. And these strange steps take us back
I was going to ask about the album leaking and it being brought forward because it was on Kanye's blog and some other places. Was anyone annoyed with that, or did you quite like it?
Well, I think we're all kind of frustrated and kind of disheartened at first to hear the news. And I kind of compared it to a kid finding their Christmas presents about 2 weeks before, you know, kind of opening them before the intended day. You know, once it happened, we sort of accepted it and realized that, you know, the music is, you know, out of our hands now, and it's out there for the world to enjoy. And we're just
went on Twitter today and I said, meeting the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, what shall I ask them? Nearly everyone said Karen's solo album. Yeah, so I was wondering, what's the plan with it? Is it still, didn't you make a solo record that was always been on the verge of coming out?
There was a couple of projects that I was working on, you know, but nothing that would be considered like a solo record or anything like that, you know. Yeah. Did work with Sam, but it's not a solo record necessarily, you know. That wouldn't be considered the solo record, but I still unfortunately have to be top secret about it, even though Sam Spiegel probably is talking yapped away about it. But sorry, there's not much luck on that one. So.
this isn't a criticism at all, but I do think when I hear Heads Will Roll, it reminds me straight away of Public Image Limited This is not a love song. Quite similar.
there are funny coincidences, you know. I mean, like, none of us were thinking of that Public Image mm-hmm. song, but you made that connection. There's always, like, you know, parallels and associations, you know, people can make. Then there's more, like, obvious parallels, you know, where it's like, you know, it's like where it's more of like direct imitation.
Yeah, when we do it, it's not obvious parallels, but when everyone else does it, it is. Off with your head, dance to the dead. Head to roll, head to roll, head to roll on the floor.
Do you have some favourite dance records that I know you talked about Jorge Moroder in interviews and Donna Summer?
I talked about I Feel Love, which is one of my favourite dance tracks. Like, as far as dance records, probably I would say the Tom Tom Club. Yeah, that was like definitely one of my favourite for dancing. And I'm trying to think. What about yours?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like the dance music I like is all from like 1981 and 82, that time frame.
Karen O and Co and It's Blitz is out now on Polydor Records. It's recommended by both our Tim and Vera Lynn. The Blitz. The Blitzy. Right. Rosie.
Yes, I got it.
How are you?
I'm brilliant.
Yeah, you are. Great. You aren't, are you? You've been under the weather.
But you're not supposed to say that you're peaky. You're feeling peaky on the podcast. You're supposed to be like, yeah, loads of energy, Scott Mills style.
Yeah, no, but Sarah Cox always does that.
Oh, right.
And I like all the more for that when she says that. Have you got a musical thought to share with us?
Well, I was quite happy today to receive an invitation to the Florence and the Machine playback next week for the first listen to her album, which is called Lungs, which I think describes her vocal style very well.
And indeed her personal style. You're quite excited about this then?
Yeah, I think, loads of people have been saying, oh, it's really good, you know, people that are close to her camp, but have been saying she's honed in her style and it's very pop and it's, you know, it's going to do really well. So I'm quite interested to hear what she comes up with.
Okay, now let's both welcome for the first time inside this pod, Rebecca Nicholson, who writes for Guardian/Music, The Guide and any other number of estimable publications.
Yes, anyone will have me. Thank you. Hello.
Hello. So what's the weirdest place you've written for in your wide and varied career?
I think it probably is Heat magazine. I wasn't out doorstopping celebrities. And
drawing the ring of shame around people's arms.
Yeah, about people's weird long fingers or anything like that. I was just making fairly terrible jokes about Heat-style TV.
What is Heat-style TV? What's it like the most?
10 years younger and the Graham Norton show and things like that. And I think I might have reviewed Miss Marple for them once as well, which was very entertaining. But yeah, I think that's probably the strangest one.
Let's move on to Singles Club, and we're going to start with Dead Prez, and this is Stimulus Plan. $4 or $5 bill, certain parts of the bill, you can get your blood spilled on the concrete. Little 17-year-old nigga doing foul in the hood, on the prowl out in these streets. I done been in the same situations, heartbeat racing, you come up or you don't eat. I done had to sleep in the train station, going stop to stop with no place to be. Paper chasing, filling out applications for weeks, just trying to get up on my feet. But they ain't hiring, so a nigga was forced to resort to the street just to make ends meet. It's called survival, the struggle continues. If it offends you, let me remind you, we all have instinct to do what we have to do to make it through, and this drive is primal, whether you at Mickey D's taking an order. That was Stimulus Plan by Dead Prez. That rarest of beasts, a political hip-hop group, Dead Prez are Stickman and M1, and in a great piece of Wikipedian ease, their page describes their lyrical interests as being the following: evolution, veganism, institutional racism, critical pedagogy, police, capitalism, education, prison systems, religion, activism against governmental repression, and corporate control over the media. So just a tight brief there. They haven't made an album for 5 years, but they've got one coming up. Information Age is coming out later this year. Rosie, you chose this record.
I did. It's probably no surprise now, after you've read all that Dead Prez do not like President Obama. And that's one of the reasons that I picked this, because we had a real glut of politically inspired rap music around the time of Obama's inauguration, and some of them are better than others, and we talked about them quite a bit on this podcast. And this is an example. Rappers talking about something quite boring in their standards, the stimulus plan, something that not a lot of people understand, and doing so in a way that they're pretty scathing about Obama. They always have been. They've never said that they liked him, because they have obviously decided at some point they're going to take that line that if you go anywhere near the state, if you're in charge, basically, it doesn't matter who you are, you're not okay, which is one line to take, I suppose. I like the rhythm of the rapping in this. It's brilliant. I think the rapping's really great. Their flow, so to speak, is miles above so many other rappers around, and still is. And the sound of the actual track, and it's definitely down to DJ Green Lantern, kind of reminded me of that period of Eminem, Dre stuff, you know, when Eminem was sort of at its peak a few years ago, which is not really what you expect Dead Prez to be doing. It doesn't sound like a typical Dead Prez backing track. It's got a few things about it which stuck out for me, basically.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the flow. Not sure I do agree with you on the music, though. Rebecca, what did you make of this track?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things I did like about it, actually, the kind of driving rhythm, but I think they've done a remarkable job of making economics sound exciting.
I still don't understand it. I still don't understand what the stimulus plan is.
Well, they do help you with that, because they say Google the euro. So if you Google the euro, then you'll obviously understand. It's a bit lazy, really, on their part, isn't it? Yeah, so we'll tell you a bit about it, but go away and Google the rest.
I mean, I thought, I don't mean to sound kind of too somber and pernickety here, because I think it's a great thing that's, you know, that you have a rap group in a funky way tackling an important issue. But I wasn't quite sure there was much in there, politically speaking. I thought that it was taking very much the populist approach towards this, all these stimulus and the bailouts, which is we've chucked all our taxpayers' money in, where's it gone, what's happened to it, and then kind of turning it into, well, we're all being
exploited
by the system, so this is what's happening. Musically, I had a problem with it. I just couldn't find the bass line. Was there a bass line?
In the intro of it, what I found really made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up was the samples of people, you know, people sort of being vox popped and stuff, and there was loads of drama there. And you're right, it does kind of peter out when they get going, maybe because it just wants to say, listen to what he's saying, don't pay attention to too much else, I don't know. No, I agree with you. And I don't agree with the political sentiment necessarily. I just want to know what people think. I think it's quite interesting that that they're doing this, and, you know, they've obviously decided, no, we're not going to say we like the black president just because he's black.
Dead Prez and Paul Krugman together at last, right? As you say, Rosie, that's produced by DJ Green Lantern, and there's a collaboration between the two, Dead Prez and Green Lanterns, coming out in June. That's quite distinct from Dead Prez's own album, Information Age, which is coming out later this year. Next up on Singles Club, it's Nights of the Week by Apes and Androids. But the tragedy has a better ring. There's a boy you'll kiss and a girl you sex. I wonder if they know you're there. Just drink tall shots, those will get me nods, and nobody really care. So get my coat, little duckling. I think that's time to go. That's Apes and Androids with Nights of the Week. Apes and Androids are Brian Jacobs and David Tobias. They met as kids in New Jersey, but now they live in Brooklyn. That's a crazy idea. Wouldn't anybody else think of that? Move to Brooklyn. They make music that references the 80s and have gigs that spill over into nigh-on cabaret, which has included, at various points, cheerleaders and Korean drum circles. Rebecca, are you going to tell us about Korean drum circles?
Sadly, it's not something I know a great deal
about.
Not
your area of expertise.
No, but I chose Apes and Androids because they are such a ludicrous band. They are ridiculous. And I think that there's a lot of room for a band that doesn't take itself too seriously, a guitar band that doesn't take itself too seriously. They're an awful lot of fun. They're coming over to the UK next week, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them. Although I did interview them a couple of weeks ago and asked if they were bringing the whole show over, because they promised things like neon zombies and giants and things like that, but sadly they said they might have a problem getting all that through customs.
Yeah, the zombies are staying at home.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be slightly more low-key, but I mean, that song is just daft. It starts off sounding like John Hughes' 80s Journey ballad and ends up this kind of weird mix between Daft Punk and of Montreal, and they're fun, and I don't think that anyone could deny that they're a good laugh, so
I think I 100% agree with you, and I think that's right at the heart of this, and it's exactly why I don't like this song. It comes out for me that the end of it, there's bits of the John Hughes things, definitely in the first half. The end, I kind of heard the elements of David Bowie and Queen, which are quite heavy in their other tracks. But when David Bowie and Queen made that sort of music, they take it seriously and they do it with oomph. And there's just the sense that they've just got their tongue in their cheek, and it just undermines it for me. Rosie.
I was also trying to think who exactly it reminded me of, and I came up with someone who sits between Talk Talk and Tiger, whatever that is. But actually, listening to it again then, it reminded me of that song that's on the Napoleon Dynamite soundtrack by a band called When in Rome, The Promise. And what those two songs have in common is they both sound massively underproduced. And I think with this song, I kind of think it's got all the elements there that kind of get buried. And like you said, because it goes sort of around the houses in so many different ways as a song, that it could be huge. And actually, remember when we were talking about Patrick Wolfe a couple of podcasts ago, and we were talking about willfully not making that big pop song, that if he made a song like this, put his hand to it, I mean, this is the kind of stuff I think he should be doing, which obviously he wouldn't do in a million years. It's great. I think it's got a really good hook, and it has got good sound to it, but it does feel to me almost too underproduced, almost too sort of raw.
Despite the fact that there's all these layers, do you think it's because there's too many layers that are
maybe, I just think, but maybe it should be arranged in a different way, but some of the key components in it kind of get a bit buried, and it feels to me like it's just like one amazing producer away from being huge. I think I say that too much about songs on this podcast, though.
Maybe you need to go into production.
Maybe I do. Just make that thing a little bit bigger and that thing a little bit lower.
When I spoke to them a couple of weeks ago, I asked them who they would like to work with. And because this album was, I think they put it out themselves in America last year. So maybe that's something to do with the production side of things. But I asked them who they'd like to work with, and they said Timbaland. But they said Timbaland at his peak, so not Timbaland, Chris Cornell album.
Timbaland's production has fallen off a little bit.
Timbaland has fallen off, but Timbaland, when he was doing Are You That Somebody with Aaliyah, that kind of, when he was just incredible and making music like nobody else. So maybe if that
That's
could
like
happen,
10 years ago. Now,
yeah, it is. But if that could happen, then maybe they're onto something. So we should try and...
Let's try and hook the
get
two
them
of them
to collaborate,
together.
Yeah.
All right, that's Nights of the Week, and it features on the album Blood Moon, which is available to buy now. And as Rebecca said, the band are playing in London on April the 14th. Final track on Singles Club is We Made You by Eminem.
The enforcer, looking for more women to torture. Welcome to the cutest girl in Charlie Horser. Sorry, Porsche, but what's Ellen DeGeneres have that I don't? Are you telling me tenderness? Well, I can be as gentle and as smooth as a gentleman. Give me my Ventolin inhaler and 2 Xenadrin, and I'll invite Sarah Palin out to dinner then. Nail her, baby, say hello to my little friend. Rick, forget cape, and let's cut out the middleman. Forget him or you're gonna end up in the hospital again. And this time it won't be for the Ritalin bin.
That's Eminem with We Made You. Eminem is, well, you know who he is. This is the first single to be taken from The Relapse, his 6th studio album. Most of it has been produced by Dr. Dre, and it is thought that every single celebrity in the continental United States will get a name check on it at some point. My choice, I will put a little disclaimer at the top that says that I'm really doing this because it's out this week and it's in the news and lots of people are talking about it, not because it's my favourite record of all time ever. But I do kind of like it. I thought the Crack the Bottle, which has been in the charts, was the first thing on this album, but I think reading around it, I think what happened was that leaked on the internet, so they put it out for sale. And this was intended to be the first single. And if so, that fits, because whenever Eminem has a new album out, he releases a single which slags off loads of celebrities and puts loads of jokes in there and sounds a little bit silly. And the rhythm is also quite similar, if you think of The Real Slim Shady and Without Me in particular, it's kind of quite related to this tune. So it's kind of like a Christmas special where he comes out and he pulls out all his hits, all the catchphrases that everybody knows him for, reminds everybody that he's there. So I like that for that effect, even if it's not, you know, it's the same old shtick. I also like what Dr. Dre's done with this. I suppose out of all the eras that have been plundered by hip-hop producers over time, Fat Sam's Grand Slam, Speakeasy Style, hasn't quite been plundered yet, and he does it on this one, so that's quite nice. Over to you, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think those, as you said to me, I think they're the reasons that I don't like it. I think he has done this so many times before, and to say that he came out of retirement, you know, his kind of retirement in quotation marks, with this, it just feels disappointing. I can't believe that this is what he spent 3 years working on, really. He's dissing celebrities, sort of, which he's done many, many times before. Even the kind of the beats, I think it's disappointing in the sense that when it starts, it actually sounds like Big Spender, which is a really bizarre thing for it to sound like. He's basically reading Heat magazine over Big Spender. And I think that for someone so massive, it's a shame. But I don't know if we've kind of misremembered what Eminem is like, because he has had the kind of intense, serious moments. But most of the time, he's just making fairly appalling jokes.
Over, frat boy jokes.
Yeah, so I don't know if actually this is what we should have expected, because this is what he's like. But it's a bit of a letdown for me.
Rosie.
I can't make up my mind about it at all, because I really, really do like Eminem against my better judgment in a lot of ways. I think he's just a genuine star and there aren't that many around him. I think he's got an amazing talent. It's like exactly what he did with Without Me, but with a weaker song, slightly weaker song. But even when I was watching it, I was like, oh, he's doing that thing again. I still wanted to carry on watching and it still made me laugh, even though it shouldn't. And it was still just like really super immature, but I just couldn't help but like it.
Well, this is that I think he worms himself into the mainstream popular culture in that way.
Yeah.
And it becomes part of that fabric. He's talking to the masses. It's People magazine, not The Source.
But what I was trying to work out what the chorus, what exactly he's saying, is kind of, is a woman singing from the point of view of a fan. She's sort of saying, we love you, why wouldn't we? We made you. I'm not sure how revealing that. I mean, is that quite revealing about what's been going on? Because he says he hates being famous. He's been a total recluse for the last 3 years. And I'm trying to work out exactly what's behind the chorus.
I think it's an act. It's a put on. It's doing what people expect Eminem to be doing. And I think if you read all the various appearances he's made on, you know, hip hop radio stations phoning up in the middle of a phone in and all of a sudden saying stuff, it sounds like he's had this kind of almost breakdown and come back together and pulled himself and got back in the studio with Dre and decided to do it one more time. Whether for the money, whether because there is a part of him that likes it as much as there's a part of him that hates it, I don't know. But I think it's exactly part of that dialogue that he usually goes into in these albums. And it's not new. And it's not original, but he does do it better than anybody else. That is Eminem and We Made You, and it's all around the internet right now, and The Relapse is out in May. Last week's singles reviews got discussed on the blog. There was quite an in-depth analysis of the state of dancehall music by SV80. Rosie?
I'm not sure Rosie's quite right in suggesting that there's a real division between dancehall acts with a heavy emphasis on spiritualities and ones embracing slackness. Religion is such a large part of Jamaican culture, and Rastafarianism such a huge influence on reggae, it's relatively rare to find people who don't have a foot in both camps. I've never quite been able to get my head around singers making extensive reference to Leviticus or praising the Most High 1 minute and talking about orgies and AK-47s the next, but it's extremely common.
Capleton, Beanie Man, Bounty Killer, etc. have been at it for years to one degree or another. I'm sceptical as to whether the gangster Ras tag applied to people like Mavado and Munga is anything more than marketing. Japantha felt it necessary to say that he likes the show. I'm not sure that's not really done on the blog. It's usually, this is a bloody terrible show, why don't you go home and never make it again? So thank you, Japantha. He says he also really liked Wild Birds and Peace Drums, not dissimilar to my beloved Poker Haunted, who, by the way, are heading over to the UK for a tour with a blissfully psychedelic droney Son Aurore in the next few months. Rosie, can we get an interview? Well, can we, Rosie? Can
well,
we?
I'll try. I did go, and Japantha said go and listen to Poker Haunted about a couple of months ago on the blog, and I did go and listen
you
to
did.
Them. I do like them.
Yeah. Well, let's see what we can do on that front. So we want your reviews of this week's tracks from Dead Prez and Eminem in the rap contingent and from Apes and Androids in the futuristic Simian selection on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you think of them in 4,000 characters or less. I think that's the arbitrary text limit that's been set by the blogmasters. And these are the tracks that are out to buy next week. BJ Harvey and John Parrish, Black Hearted Love.
Was to have some fun.
No, I'm
telling you one thing. Number one.
Peachy Strider featuring N Dubs. Number one.
When it was just a fling before, now you're the one. See, you got to know.
For virgins and rich girls.
You got to know. We'll walk around.
Death Cab for Cutie, The Open Door. Thank you very much to Rebecca for coming in to join us in Singles Club today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did indeed.
Hope to have you back again. That's it for this week's Singles Club, but catch the textualizatory version each week at guardian.co.uk/music, where you can watch the videos too. Next on Music Weekly, turn it up for Speech to Bell.
I can see you held it down and learned patience, cause some reasons are without an explanation. This is my song, so I'll explain the situation. But where your business out, girl? Cause that's a bait thing. I saw you at the station, like it's working, going money half a mech, so just stick to what you're doing. It's crazy, cause together we could've made cheese. Cause I didn't, truthfully, you're right like me. The only real difference is you slide at me. Your need for attention makes you attract the beef. Ironically, I used to say you was a mad cow. You a funny little girl.
That's Speech to Bell, our second guest this week, and another rapper, but not your average rapper, eh, Rosie?
No, Speech to Bell, 26-year-old female rapper from South London. She just finished her debut album and she was signed to Big Dada after taking her demo over to them, and they really liked her. And I think the reason they really liked her is the reason lots of people have been praising her is she's, you know, I know a breath of fresh air is a really overused phrase in music, but, you know, sound-wise, she's got that kind of acid jazz going thing. It's not typical hip-hop. The stuff that she's rapping about and the way that she raps is very refreshing. It's not like listening to people brag about stuff they don't have. It's very, very real, and it's quite hard to listen to at some points. And she caught everyone's attention with this really brilliant single, The Key, which she explained the meaning behind to me when I caught up with her in the studio last week.
Yeah, the lyrical inspiration was derived from like a friendship that just kind of went sour. I think about the time was about 15, 16. We were friends and then we fell out probably over something so random I can't even remember. And it was kind of like, just looking back at hindsight, you might feel like you're the best of friends and then, you know, you head off in different directions. So from that first verse, I kind of carried it on just into outside of being friends with people, just in general, being able to have understanding about situations and
being the bigger person.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly.
And musically, you know, when you came up with the lyrics, did you already have a track in mind for it?
I had the lyrics already. It was a producer in Australia called Platonic Lab. He had these clarinet lines that somebody had played, quite a few clarinet lines. He chopped them up and then just kind of layered them together. So it's about five layers of clarinet. It matched the tempo of that song. So I recorded the lyrics just on the clarinet lines. I came back about 2 days later and he'd had the song there. It took him about 2 days, probably.
When you were talking about writing that song, about being 15, 16, about that age, is that the period of your life when you wrote quite a lot of the material on this album? Because I read that it was like a sort of four-year period of you writing this, which doesn't seem possible because you're not that old. So I don't know at what point you started writing it.
Well, I'm 26. The period of time was from about 19 to the age of like 23. The whole album starting with Searching and ending with Speech Therapy. A bit closer to 26, but generally from 19 to 23, most of the album was written.
I actually feel like it's a very positive album, but there's some dark stuff in there. So what was happening in your life during that time?
Well, I'm glad you picked up on that. I think it's easy to just take things like as on surface value. I write a lot in hindsight. So that's the reason why it might start off as a moan, but then it graduates to, you know what I mean, some overstanding and saying, OK, things might get better because I've already gone through the situation.
Obviously, some of it was written when you were in a hostel.
Yeah.
And you paint, I think it's Searching.
Yeah.
You paint quite a vivid picture of what it's like to actually be in that position. Yeah. And I just wondered if you could explain a little bit about how you got there and what was going on. And
I grew up with my mum, and I think, generally speaking, when you get to a certain age, maybe around 17, 18, and you start to feel like you're a woman, and then your mum's just like, there's only one in this house. Do you know what I mean? You kind of, there's tension. And plus as well, at the time, I didn't really want to go to work, and I didn't really want to follow on with education. And I can kind of understand now why for my mum it was like, you should be doing more. But then when you're 17, it's hard for anybody to really say anything. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, we had some tension. So I went to a hostel and when I was 19, and that's kind of the start of the album, was Searching, 2 a.m. in my hostel bed.
Okay, so you went there out of choice, so it's not totally...
No, I wouldn't say choice, I wouldn't say that. You don't choose to go in a hostel, you're forced to go in a hostel because of your situation, do you know what I mean? I can't imagine what anybody would choose that, especially being young, would choose to not be in the comfort of a home and have comfort of food in the fridge all the time and stuff like that. Slowly building up a savings every day, although it's hard to save when you're getting low pay. I stop shorting so my days are kind of quiet. I quite like it, the less violent with less lions. I put in extra effort, change up the gear when I'm, I got the sales up and I'm steering them. I'm staying clear with them, yeah, you know who I'm talking about. It's unnecessary for the name to leave my mouth. Look, words are power, so I manifest a fall. Everything I think is what I thought, and everything I thought is what I feel. Everything
I feel is what I am. Get a job, which I can understand, yeah. And you didn't want to go to college. Did you know that you wanted to do music? I mean, I know that you were obviously writing a lot at that point. Yeah. Was it always music for you?
It was always music. I always wanted to either do music or be a chef, one of those two things. It's like, thing with music, like growing up, it's not part of a normal curriculum. When you're in school and things like that, it doesn't really seem like a reality. So even though you do have that sort of innate desire to do music and make it and stuff like that, it feels like the world says that's not allowed. You can kind of get into a place where if you don't do that, then I'm not going to do anything else, and you end up doing nothing. When I got signed and that, it was because I'd made a conscious decision to do something. So at the time I got signed, I had a job. Do you know what I mean? I was trying to reach out and do things, and I think that's the reason why as well these things have happened, the deal, the album and everything, is because I wasn't just kind of sitting there saying, I'm not going to do anything, I was going to do something.
Your label mate, Roots Maneuver, said something about you which I was quite touched by. He said, regardless of hip-hop or UK hip-hop, she's just an artist in her own right.
Yep.
Is that kind of reflective of how you want to be seen or your influences? Because I think the sound of the album, kind of acid jazz sound, isn't really around that much at the moment.
Hip-hop is something that I connected to because of poetry. I'm sure if I could sing, I might be a singer. Do you know what I mean? It might have taken me in that direction, but because it was something I connected to and felt I could do, that's what led me down that direction in terms of how I express the art. But I'm still a fan of just the art in general, soul music, classical music. I think I'm going to have to just kind of hopefully show people that it's not really about boxes, which... people can listen to it, and I am rapping, I'm an MC, but the music doesn't necessarily put me into any particular one box.
Were you a fan of Roots Maneuver before you signed to the label?
Witness, is, I think, is one of probably the best UK hip-hop songs. So, yeah, I definitely was a fan. He's got a style I can appreciate where it's like he's not trying to come up with the most amount of words to explain something. He just keeps it very simple and just gives into you in a way that you don't have to sit there trying to work out what he means. It's just, you know, it's a feeling, which I like.
And how do we get from South London to Melbourne? What happened there? Because that's where you recorded the album.
Yes. That's a bit of a journey. It's Wayne Lotek, who produced the album, was living out there. He's still living out there now. He came over for a couple of days. I think it was to renew his passport. We hooked up and did Searching pretty much like a day or two. And so after that, when I was talking to my A&R about, you know, who I wanted to work with, I definitely wanted to work with him. And because he had a studio and he knew a lot of musicians, it made sense to go out there. 2 a.m. in my hostel bed, my eyes them red, my belly ain't fed. I got butter but I ain't got bread, and I'm smoking on my last cigarette. I ain't got creds, I can't make calls, I got no papers, I got no jewels. Got debts up to my eyeballs, who made these rules? It's a catch 22, Christmas soon coming, I got no funds. But what's Christmas if you ain't at mum's? What I'm supposed to do, sit here and wait for the slip of JSA? No blasted way, I'ma call cheat and get through, no conceit. Or use my gyro and buy a 16th. No, that's small time but I gotta make peace. I'm so hungry, man, I just got eaten to a certain degree.
That's Speech to Bell. The Key is available now on Big Dada, and check her MySpace for upcoming live dates.
Thanks, Rousey. Now, out of that and into this, and some relief from the rap. Here's the feature with no name. It's Laura Barton on Tim Hardin.
What can I say? She's a walking away from what we've seen. What can I do? Still loving you, it's all a dream. How can we hang on to a dream? How can it really be the way it seems?
You might not know Tim Hardin, but you're probably aware of his songwriting. It was Hardin who wrote Reason to Believe, most famously sung by Rod Stewart, and If I Were a Carpenter, which was a hit for Bobby Darin in 1966. Though he did have a little success with records such as Misty Roses, which enjoyed some play on the US Top 40, Hardin's songs tended to fare less well when he sang them himself. This was most likely due to the fact that there was a more melancholy flavour to his recording, akin to Nick Drake or Karen Dalton, something haunted and disconsolate. Listen to his version of If I Were a Carpenter, and you'll find it a far damper, darker version than Darin's interpretation.
If I were a carpenter, and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? If a tinker were my trade, would you still find me carrying the pots I made, following behind me?
Born in Oregon, Hardin fought in the Vietnam War, and it was here that he discovered heroin, an addiction that would plague him for most of his life. In the early 60s, he was performing around Greenwich Village, mostly in a blues style, and in Boston caught the eye of record producer Eric Jacobson. Early recordings for Columbia were deemed a failure, and it would be another couple of years before he signed to Verve, by which time his blues had begun to blur with folk and developed a certain jazziness too. It was a blend of musical styles that he perfected on tracks such as How Can We Hang On to a Dream and Lenny's Tune.
If I were a miller at a mill wheel grinding.
There would be 10 albums in total. His first, Tim Hardin 1, was released in 1966, and though Rough Hewn is surely one of the finest albums of the era. He followed it with Tim Hardin 2, probably his greatest recording. Less bluesy than its predecessor, its highlights include The Lady Came from Baltimore and Red Balloon. His final album, 9, was released in 1973. 7 years later, in 1980, Hardin died from an overdose of heroin and morphine in Los Angeles.
If I listened long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lie straight face while I cry, still I'd look to find a reason to believe someone like you.
That was The Feature with No Name, and that usually signals the approaching end of the podcast. Just time to get in a little bit of face backery. Frog Princess, said Rosie, I believe.
Sorry if this is a double post, it's not. But I really want to send oodles of love to Andy Bell. I followed Erasure from the beginning, and your 1991 gig at La Cigale in Paris was one of the finest nights in my life. I still sing A Little Respect every morning on the way to the office. Keep up the good work. Every morning. That's amazing.
Kicking the Alsace.
I mean, it's a brilliant song.
DX Bay said, top show as ever. Erasure hailed as a hipster reference. Not so sure if that is entirely a good thing, but at least they are getting the retro nod they so deserve. Are they hipster? Would you say they're hipster? I thought it was just something peculiar between you and Tim.
Yeah, so did I, but apparently not.
Well, very good. And Felim O'Neill, who is a proper actual music journalist, wrote and said, saw Bat for Lashes twice this week. They were excellent. That's all, really.
To Facebook now, hello to new friends Juan Aginbi, Mamadou Sarr, Megan Key, and Mitchell A. Ramos.
Fantastic. Right, post comments on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of Speech to Bell and yes. The address is guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. And also, if you've ever watched Miss Marple, because somebody recommended it in Heat magazine, do get in touch. We're back next Friday. Register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at guardian.co.uk/music. That's all for this week's show. Thanks so much to Rosie.
That's okay, to Paul.
I was trying to stretch out the rhymes there. See you all next week. Bye.